Over lunch, I explained to a group of boys that my father was a prince. My grandfather, see, he's a chief. It's sort of like the king of a tribe, you know, like the Indians. So that makes my father a prince. He'll take over when my grandfather dies. What about after that? One of my friends asked as we emptied our trays into the trash bin. I mean, will you go back and be a prince? Well, if I want to, I could. It's sort of complicated, see, because the tribe is full of warriors. Like Obama, that means burning spear. The men in our tribe all want to be chief, so my father has to settle these feuds before I can come. As the words tumbled out of my mouth, and I felt the boys readjust to me, more curious and familiar as we bumped into each other in the line back to class, a part of me really began to believe the story. But another part of me knew that what I was telling them was a lie, something I'd constructed from the scraps of information I'd picked up from my mother. After a week of my father in the flesh, I had decided that I preferred his more distant image, an image I could alter on a whim, or ignore when convenient. If my father hadn't exactly disappointed me, he remained something unknown, something volatile and vaguely threatening. "Miss Hefty has invited your father to come to school on Thursday. She wants him to speak to the class," my mother told me. I couldn't imagine worse news. I spent that night and all the next day trying to suppress thoughts of the inevitable. The faces of my classmates when they heard about mud huts, the painful jokes afterwards. Each time I remembered, my body squirmed as if it had received a jolt to the nerves. I was still trying to figure out how I'd explain myself when my father walked into our class the next day. Miss Hefty welcomed him eagerly, and as I took my seat, I heard several children ask each other what was going on. I became more desperate when our math teacher, a big no-nonsense Hawaiian named Mr. Eldridge, came into the room, followed by 30 confused children from his homeroom next door. "We have a special treat for you today," Miss Hefty began. "Barry Obama's father is here, and he's come all the way from Kenya, in Africa, to tell us about his country." The other kids looked at me as my father stood up, and I held my head stiffly, trying to focus on a vacant point on the blackboard behind him. He had been speaking for some time before I could finally bring myself back to the moment. He was leaning against Miss Hefty's thick oak desk and describing the deep gash in the earth where mankind had first appeared. He spoke of the wild animals that still roamed the plains, the tribes that still required a young boy to kill a lion to prove his manhood. He spoke of the customs of the Luo, how elders received the utmost respect and made laws for all to follow under great trunk trees. He told us of Kenya's struggle to be free, how the British had wanted to stay and unjustly rule the people, just as they had in America, how many had been enslaved only because of the color of their skin, just as they had in America, but that Kenyans, like all of us in the room, longed to be free and develop themselves through hard work and sacrifice. When he finished, Miss Hefty was absolutely beaming with pride. All my classmates applauded heartily, and a few struck up the courage to ask questions, each of which my father appeared to consider carefully before answering. The bell rang for lunch, and Mr. Eldridge came up to me. "You've got a pretty impressive father,"